Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on this Thursday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. There's a new survey on the most unpopular groups in the U.S. I guess it's a list you don't want to be on, but they have a list of that. We'll talk about those. There's a warning about your webcam. You have to be careful with those. Tensions are rising in Germany. We'll take a look at what's going on over there. And interesting story, too, about how to build a castle the old-fashioned way. Some people are trying it. We'll give you some details about that and other stories coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online, kpcg.fm. Live link there at thetrumpet.com as well. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today as well. And we are, come on, man, we're tired, aren't we?
A little bit.
Yeah, because we had a fun evening last night. The Step Crew, they're here at Armstrong Auditorium. And they are performing tonight, Thursday evening, at 7:30. So more information is available there at armstrongauditorium.org. Spoiler alert, there aren't very many tickets left, but if if you're quick, you might snag one or two. And so anyway, last night they did some rehearsals. We did a little bit of filming with them. They're going to make a DVD. And so
I saw you down there. You were carrying around some cameras, having to bend low. Looked very uncomfortable.
It was. I'm not as surprised as I used to be. I had to move those around. But
I just had to sit in the back.
Yeah.
I was just observing and reporting.
Yeah, you're going to have a write-up about that event. So it's exciting. You guys can come on out to Armstrong Auditorium if you have tickets. We'll see you there tonight. If not, again, you have to be quick because there's only a couple left. 10 to be exact. When I say a couple, I always mean a few. But a couple actually means two.
Several.
So, yeah. So I'm
Several's
off.
Several's more vague.
I'm off on my my numbers there. But anyway, not many left. But hopefully you've got some. And if not, maybe you can get one or two and come on out to the concert tonight. It's going to be exciting there at Armstrong Auditorium. And I'm not as spry as I used to be, but they are spry. They jump pretty high, kick. It's a very high energy show. A lot of step dancing and a lot of just great music. All kinds of just real high energy, up-tempo stuff. Very exciting. And they come from all over and form their group. They come from Canada, a fair number of them, I think also Scotland. So really it's a pretty global feel at this show.
Yes, and the theater was literally shaking from the loud music and the loud dancing, and all the lights were shining in my eyes, and I was just overwhelmed. It was pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's a really cool show. They have a whole lighting, you know, set up, and of course the audio and the visual. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot involved there, and so it's going to be a great show. So come on out tonight at Armstrong Auditorium and see that if you can. And if you live close, you'll probably hear it anyway because it'll be loud.
It will be really loud.
Not that loud. We never do that to the neighbors, but it'll be really, really good show. Some other headlines to talk about today. This is an interesting report that's come out from the Salt Lake Tribune. There is a survey, I guess, of the most unpopular groups in the United States. So I don't think you want to be on this one. But anyway, the number one group on there, they are new to the top spot, is Muslims. Mm. Muslims surpass atheists as most unpopular group in the U.S. This study found almost half those surveyed, 48.9%, said they would disapprove of their child marrying a Muslim, up from 33.5% in 2006. The spiritual but not religious are mistrusted by 12% of Americans, while almost 40% of Americans say the rise of the nuns is not a good thing. Nuns, N-O-N-E-S, being people that just have no religious affiliation. Disapproval rates for several minority groups have grown, including Jews, Latinos, and Asian Americans experienced a 10-point jump in disapproval, while recent immigrants, conservative Christians, and African Americans grew about 13% each. That covers everybody, doesn't it? Nobody likes anybody, I guess.
I guess. That's how it should be. I mean, everyone is clashing all the time, so it's not too surprising to see the results that way.
Yeah, the report's pretty accurate probably to how people feel. They say the new study also attempts to find out why atheists are so reviled by what its authors call, quote, dominant group members, a.k.a. religious Americans. The findings pinpoint three things. Religious Americans associate atheists with criminality, materialism, and a lack of accountability. The study's authors, they are sociologists, four of them, they describe the jump in disapproval of Muslims as a major change and are focusing now on identifying reasons for it. I think I could save them a few bucks. I think I've got an idea why people are kind of not so happy there, and I think it's terrorism.
It's a pretty deserving group when it comes to people not liking you.
They've been in the news with just terrorist activities. I mean, that's why people don't like it. I would think that's the reason.
Well, we were even saying yesterday these terrorist groups are purposely trying to raise animosity toward all Muslims so that all Muslims get into radical activity. Yeah, it's working.
Yeah, there's that report we talked about yesterday from that professor over there in France, I think it was, mm-hmm. where he was looking at that because of those activities, it's kind of everybody's getting lumped into groups. So anyway, I guess everybody's on the list, so I guess no matter who we are, somebody doesn't like us. But so that's the report there from the Salt Lake Tribune. I guess they do it every couple of years or so to kind of figure out who is least liked. Maybe they'll have a most popular list. That'd be a better one to be on, I guess.
Yes,
maybe not, though. I don't know.
It seems like the least like would be the more popular read, though.
Yeah. Here's an interesting one from thehill.com. The FBI director says you need to cover up your webcam. Everybody's got, you know, if you've got a computer, you have a webcam. I've got three looking at me right now. and then if you count your phone, most phones now have two because there's one on each side. So they're saying to cover those up. The head of the FBI on Wednesday defended putting a piece of tape over his personal laptop's webcam, claiming the security step was a common sense one that most should take. Director James Comey said there's some sensible things you should be doing, and that's one of them. He said, you go into any government office, and we all have the little camera things that sit on top of the screen. He added, they all have a little lid that closes down on them. He says, you do that so that people who don't have authority don't look at you. And he says, I think that's a good thing. So he took a little bit of heat, I guess, a while ago because he came out and said that he did, in fact, put a piece of tape over his laptop camera to keep away prying eyes. And people kind of laughed at him because he's the head of the FBI. But I think it may be pretty good sense, I guess. I don't know. I always feel kind of like, well, I don't care. I mean, not that I'd want somebody looking at me, but if they want to see me sitting there just staring back at them for a couple hours, more power to you. But I get it. I mean, you wouldn't want somebody to spy on you. And it can happen. That does happen sometimes where people can hack into those devices.
I actually saw someone trying to push an invention that was like a metal clip that goes around the top of the laptop and covers up the camera. But the thing is, tape would do the trick as well, so it was kind of hard to convince people to invest in such a thing.
Did you ever have it happen where you're trying to pull up something on your computer or your phone and you accidentally pull up the camera and it takes you a split second to realize you're looking at yourself? And you're like, but it's just this weird, disconcerting feeling. Like, oh, who's that? I'm like, oh, that's me, actually. And then I'm like, is that a pic? No, that's me right now. Maybe that doesn't happen to anybody, but that is.
Sometimes I accidentally click on the Skype icon at the bottom of the screen, and then it just won't go away. I try for 5 minutes to close it out, and it just doesn't want to.
Years ago, this is like late 90s, I was working at a radio station, and a company came in and set up a web camera for like a weekend. It was a promotional sort of thing. People could go on the radio station's website, and they could. Now, we're not talking about tech like today. I mean, it updated a still image like every 5 minutes. Mm. And that was like kind of cutting edge at the time. And I remember that just kind of being irritating to everybody that worked there. At first it was fun, but then it just got irritating. And so that's what people did. They just covered it up. They put something in front of it. So even back then, people were getting sick of the webcam.
Seems like they could have had some fun with that, though. Just make a pose every time you walk past.
I think people eventually just put like stuffed animals in front of it or something. Because, see, people could comment on it. So if you're working on the air you know, people start commenting about your picture, and most times they're not friendly. They're taking digs at you, you know, and so after a while you're like, okay, you can take a look at this stuffed animal here for the next hour if you want to be so critical of my appearance. So anyway, that's been going on for a while, but those cameras are all over the place nowadays. They're on our phones and laptops and everywhere else. So they say maybe covering up, maybe not a bad idea. Here's an interesting one from Politico.com. Students press UWF, that's the University of Western Florida, about they have these presidential candidates, and they're pressing them on their stance on Black Lives Matter. So I think they have four finalists. They're trying to get this job, and the students were hitting them with questions, and they all had to answer these questions. They said students asked only a few questions of the four finalists who interviewed for the University of West Florida presidency this week, but they pressed all four candidates on their positions on the Black Lives Matter movement and how they would address concerns about race relations on campus. So it's kind of a tough situation to be in because you have to, I guess they have to kind of appease the people that are there. But at the same time, I suppose they're trying to be somewhat honest too. So it was kind of interesting to see how this unfolded. And it's interesting too, because if you think about it, the students now are the ones kind of with the power or these groups, because they're determining, you know, who can stay and who can not stay in terms of employment there. Maybe they can't specifically get rid of them, but they can put enough pressure there to get rid of people. It says UWF administrators held a roundtable discussion on diversity last month, but some Black students left the forum feeling like they weren't heard or understood. Two students who attended the presidential interview said, and they took issue with the fact that administrators expressed their support for victims of the June shooting at Orlando's Pulse nightclub, but haven't taken a stance on Black Lives Matter. So they're upset about that. So that's a whole other issue. But the actual statement that I read didn't address any group specifically. It was just kind of like, we support everybody and we're inclusive. But because they didn't specifically say Black Lives Matter, they're upset. So, okay. So one of these students that's kind of irritated about this says, are we going to wait for a shooting or a killing or a noose to be hung on campus before the university is going to take a stance? That's what we don't want to wait for. That just seems like kind of extreme. I don't recall there being a lot of... They claim that about, I think, 4 years ago, they found a noose on campus. I don't know. I mean, maybe I went to college. I saw a lot of things on campus. I never thought much about it. There were some strange things too. But in any event, it seems like they're making kind of a big deal out of this. Are people on college campuses afraid of being killed for race? I haven't heard of any stories like that.
College today is so inclusive, and people are so careful not to step on anyone else's toes. When I went to public school, I got made fun of every day for everything imaginable, and it wasn't like I went home saying, "Oh, all these kids just hate me because I'm white. It's just not fair." It's not about that. People just like to dig at you. Now you can't even teasingly name call without people getting upset. And even if you just try to say we include everybody, if you're not singling out a particular group and saying we especially include you, apparently that's outrageous.
Yeah, because they did say they were inclusive of everybody.
That covers
everybody. Republican State Senator Don Getz said, quote, I feel that the Black Lives Matter movement has been perverted in some sense by people who use it. Not everybody, he said, but some people use it to say that we ought to kill cops, that we ought to disrespect the flag. I disagree with those things. I am a bit old-fashioned that way, he said, answering a student's question at this forum. He said, but on the same token, I think we need to listen. He said there is a reason why people get mad. The Black Lives Matter movement includes people who got mad for good reasons, but I believe in some cases, he says, it has been taken over by people who make it into a battle cry against police, against our country, and I am not for that. So I'm sure that wasn't received very well, but I think that makes a lot of sense. I think the problem that people might have with, say, a movement like that is that the message is kind of anti-police, anti-U.S. you know, people aren't going to support that. I don't think it has a lot to do with including everybody. They said they were going to include everybody. That's everybody. But they really want to hone in on this one particular group that is somewhat militant from their actions and even some of what they've said.
It would have been smart for Black Lives Matter to possibly be more subtle with their message, because they have slogans like pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, talking about the police. How can we talk about inclusion and unity and then include a group like that that is openly advocating killing another group of people?
Yeah, that's the ultimate exclusion.
It is.
Right. So College Board Senior Vice President Frank Ashley said this. Ashley, he's a black fellow, and he's the only racial minority finalist for the post. And I thought he had a great comment here. He said, look, he said, when I am speaking for the University of West Florida. And unfortunately, I can't speak for a specific group as much as I'd like to. He said, and I have been put in that situation a lot, being African-American. He said, I know that's not the answer you wanted to hear, but once again, I represent the university. When I say university, it's all of us. So it's, I think it's a pretty good answer. You know, when he's talking, like he says, when he's talking about that university, he means every student there, every race, every gender, two genders. it includes everybody. And so what else do you want? That seems pretty fair and balanced, at least as far as what he said.
It's almost like there's a push for segregation. Whenever you talk about just basically elevating one group and saying, well, we especially need to include you, there's even been talks of putting minorities in different housing on campuses. Didn't we have a huge struggle to get away from that entire way of life? And now it's like, oh, well, we can't coexist with these people who aren't like us, so we'll just separate ourselves.
Yeah, it's the exact thing that was fought against, and now they're fighting for it. It's strange. It's convoluted in a lot of ways. So anyway, just the fact that they have to sit around at those universities and have these big discussions, that would be like the worst. Oh, can you imagine that, being up for a job and having people ask you those questions? You know, you'd almost be like, what do you want to hear? Because it's hard to please everybody. Tough situation there for some of those administrators, some of those officials. So tough business to be in these days. Public education, for sure.
Yeah, I might want to avoid that one as much as possible.
Hazardous job. Here's a story that's kind of interesting. We were talking about web cameras there a little while ago. There's some new technology that's out. It's not, I've heard of it before, but it's being given to the consumers now more than just, say, the pro market, you might call it. Wearable camera lets you go back in time to record fleeting moments. So it's kind of cool. This is, ever wish you could go back and record that custom sports car that you just raced by, or that awesome jump shot your kid just made? It says a new wearable camera lets you do just that, go back in time, so to speak, to retroactively capture those fleeting moments you thought you missed. It's called the Perfect Memory Cameras, developed by this particular company. With a tap of its touch screen, it can record video and audio, and is capable of full high definition. It says here's how it works. With its auto edit mode, the camera is continuously recording, and when you tap its touch screen, it saves footage from the previous 5 minutes or any other duration you want to set. This allows people to retroactively save a video of an event after the fact. So it's always recording. And then he's like, oh, I just missed that. No big deal. Tap the screen and you've got the last 5 minutes or whatever duration you set. Pretty neat.
That's outstanding. What a great invention that is. Instead of people having to hold up a phone and hope that they catch the most outstanding or incredible moment that they're witnessing, now they can just go back to it and not have to be keeping the phone out the whole time.
Yeah, that happens a lot where you just miss the thing you were hoping to capture. So I think it's kind of a neat idea. I think a lot of people have seen these videos. They're all over YouTube of dash cams and crazy stuff you see on the road. And that's sort of similar, I guess, in a way where those are just recording all the time, I guess. And then you see some just unbelievable things happen, especially for some reason in foreign countries.
Yeah.
You know, YouTube is full of those videos of things happening like on Russian highways. It's just trucks flipping over and people on motorbikes just... It's bizarre, but anyway, you capture a lot of things with different cameras. Nothing is, private these days. You can capture just about anything.
Not really, yeah, and I actually heard that some of those Dash cams, especially in Russia, were actually introduced because lying about altercations on the road became so common. So they actually had to say, well, we need full-time proof. And now they're doing that to the police in this country. Like, oh, well, we can't trust anything they say, so we're going to put body cameras on them and record at all times. So there's a lot of good and bad uses for these types of technologies, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's, I think it's like anything. If you're law-abiding, you really don't have anything to worry about.
Exactly.
You know? Well, they recorded you, so what? You weren't doing anything wrong, so it should be fine. Here's an interesting story, too, from AOL News. For those people that are into construction, you might find this particularly interesting. It says, builders go back in time to construct castle the medieval way. Is there a new way to make castles? I don't think they make castles anymore. Maybe there is.
Well, the medieval way probably takes hundreds of times longer than whatever we might do now, if there is even a method for now.
It does. This is happening in France. They say blacksmiths, stonemasons, and quarrymen are hard at work at a Burgundy forest building a 13th century style castle using the most basic tools and materials, replicating the methods used hundreds of years ago to better understand them. Foregoing all modern technology, workers use hammers to break stones and forge iron, operate wooden wheels to hoist the materials up to where they are needed, and rely on a quarry for stone, clay, and sand as they build up a castle from scratch. So this castle is called the Goudelon Castle, something in that that range, I guess. It's in central eastern France. They began it in 1997 after an archaeological survey revealed a medieval fortress hidden inside the walls of a nearby chateau. Those behind the project hope to answer questions about medieval construction and provide lessons on sustainable building. So about 40 people work at the site, and then that kind of grows and then decreases depending. Some people just come and work for a while and then go somewhere else. So it was financed by about 300,000 tourists who visit each year and see the castle slowly come together and rise out of the ground there. Hundreds of people, they say, also come to volunteer occasionally on that project. And this year, the masons are working on parts such as the western corner tower, the western curtain wall, and chapel tower. The guy says, I don't like using electric tools except perhaps drills. So when I came here, I found the use of hand tools was natural. This guy's name is Nick Platt. He's from Britain. He's spending 2 weeks at the site to improve his building skills. So it's kind of neat. They can improve their skills in building, help build this castle. Tourists can come and watch it. So it seems like a pretty cool project.
Yeah, it sounds like almost... It's almost like adult playtime because it would be really hard physical labor, but where else do you find hundreds of people volunteering to just work for free on a project? It's like their imaginations come alive and they can envision how exactly a castle would have been built back then and, you know, living even that kind of a lifestyle and maybe even fending off some bad guys at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know. Do they have to have the hot oil vats at the top of the wall to drop
down?
We
need to make it realistic here. Fully equip it with all the moats and the drawbridges.
If you don't do a good job, they put you in the stocks out front. Tourists can come by and throw...
pelting by tomato.
Yeah, throw tomatoes at you. Yeah, so it's interesting. But what I thought would be interesting too is if you could talk to people from that time, and get their opinion, they'd probably be like, oh, no, we never did it that way.
We were way faster than this.
We were way smarter than this. So who knows? Maybe they know how they built it. Maybe they don't. I'm not sure. I mean, they talk about some of those old buildings and say that it's hard to recreate them today. I guess the pyramids would be the great example where, you know, I don't know if they even think they could redo it.
Well, that just shows you they have architecture like maybe we can't even dream up right now because... Yeah, a pyramid, that would take some extreme technology that I can't even really tell how that would work. That's kind of confusing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, I think from what I've seen, I think they thought they kind of built a ramp around it to get things up there and then took it away. And I'm not sure.
Wow.
Lots of different thoughts on it, but it is interesting. They didn't have all the tools like we have today, but we're probably just a lot smarter. Hard to say. The Key of David program is coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. One of the programs today is on Haggai. God has begun to shake the nations. This is a specific prophecy that is in the book of Haggai. And really interesting topic. Make sure you listen for that and understand more about that prophecy. It's something that is not commonly discussed, so it's good to understand what that's talking about. That program, coming up here in a bit on KPCG, and you can find the video online at thetrumpet.com, too, if you'd like to. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show with Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England today. He talked a fair bit about Calvin Coolidge, not a super well-known president. I think I'm safe in saying that. I mean, I think people are familiar with him on some level, but he's not like an Abraham Lincoln or a George Washington. But he was talking about Calvin Coolidge, the 30th president of the United States. He was a Republican lawyer from Vermont, and he became the vice president, and then he became the president after the death of Warren G. Harding in 1923. He was elected in his own right in 1924, and he gained a reputation as a small government conservative and also as a man who said very little, although having a rather dry sense of humor, I guess. And so he was being talked about on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show in relation to the election cycle that we're in right now, where both sides, Republican and Democrat, they both want to spend more money. That'll solve all of our problems. The problem is we don't have any, and the more money that's thrown at things, it really doesn't solve them. And here, with Calvin Coolidge, here's an example of a guy that that worked hard, came into office, didn't blame the people that were there before him, and just got to work and actually did a lot to reduce the deficit.
Yeah, that's a really good example, something that we really need today. Small government, way less spending. I actually have a hard time comprehending how we can just print off money and then pay for things that way. It's just, I thought the money in circulation was the money that was supposed to be used, but we just print it off, and then somehow, at least right now, America's getting away with it.
Don't ask questions. Just accept it.
I need an economist to explain how that works.
How does this work? You probably don't want to know. It'll make you too nervous. But so anyway, it's a really interesting program. More is talked about than just Calvin Coolidge, but that was kind of the linchpin example there. And he was talked about a fair bit during the Ronald Reagan administration as well. And so the Ronald Reagan administration has been talked about recently on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and President Reagan looked back at Calvin Coolidge and thought it was a good example. When's the last time that the deficit went down? I know the Democrats like to talk about President Clinton, that there was a big surplus and all this, but that's not totally accurate. I mean, maybe he didn't spend as much as they had planned, which, hey, that's something. But it's not like the deficit went down. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just keeps growing and growing and growing, and it's just exploded now. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Donald Trump wants to spend more. So people trust him, I think, on some level because he's dealt with big money situations. But again, how are you going to pay off all this debt? What is it, $20 trillion? Mm-hmm. And it's growing by the second. You can go online and look at that debt clock if you'd like to see numbers fly by.
Yeah, they're just soaring on the screen there. It's insane. Donald Trump was or is a very successful businessman, but he always talks about how he used bankruptcy laws to his advantage. It didn't even used to be an idea that was accepted that you could just spend past your budget. The national government never did that until I forget how many presidents in. It must have been like 15 or 20 presidents in that someone went into debt to pay off a war loan and then immediately paid it off. So now it's almost a given that you overspend.
Yeah. So eventually you can't keep doing it. So interesting program on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. Make sure you listen for that. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, take a look at some tension rising in Germany. That's coming up next on Trumpet Radio Live.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live.
I'm Ryan Malone, host of Music for Life. And did you know how many composers were originally supposed to be lawyers? In our next episode, we will explore this odd thread woven through the tapestry of music history. To supplement this discussion, we have a fascinating Sounds of Scripture segment about the musician's role in administering some of the temple business And in an eye-opening classroom corner, we will see how music education actually prepares the student for non-musical careers and shows some famous examples. Don't miss this intriguing episode on lawyer-turned-composer on the next Music for Life, titled Passing the Bar.
You can hear Music for Life this Monday at 4 p.m. Central on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm.
Welcome back to Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, online, kpcg.fm. We have a live link for you at thetrumpet.com as well. Thanks for joining us at those various locations. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. And if you'd like to send us an email, please feel free to do so. Comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today as well. We do have a listener email that they sent in. It says, they say, this comment on Facebook in regard to a Fox News story, campus craziness, college gender inclusivity. I can't say that word. Students, pronoun names, tags, et cetera, et cetera. So they're talking about all the different things you could say that would not offend people. And so this was the comment, and the listener thought this was funny. And the comment is, what if you don't feel like being a pronoun that day? Maybe you want to be a past participle or an indirect object, or what about the occasional prepositional phrase? These people are oppressing my right to grammar how I want to. It's punctuation without representation.
I just find that hilarious because I love English.
Yeah, it's a very clever comment. Sometimes the best part of an article is the comment. The comments.
Calling yourself a preposition, yeah. Around or of. My name, I'm of.
You know, yeah, it's very interesting. Here's a write-up that you've got for us here, Grant, from Fox News. Far-right group and asylum seekers fight in Germantown. What happened over there?
Well, some of the far-right Germans, people who are sick of the migrant crisis in Germany, finally took it outside with some of the objects of their scorn. The 80 far-right Germans fought with 20 asylum seekers. So they had a pretty big upper hand here.
Those are pretty good odds, depending on the size of the individuals and the age.
Smart gang of ne'er-do-wells.
So they just had problems with them, and they said, let's fight it out?
Let's do this.
Wow.
Yeah, and one of the officials, dozens of police had to intervene, but one of the officials actually proposed an alcohol ban at one of these squares. So apparently the whole problem is people drinking too much, and that's why these two radically different cultures are clashing. I'm thinking it's actually something quite a bit more serious than that. Maybe alcohol sets it off, but the fact that Germans are seeing migrants flood into their towns and they feel unsafe could be another issue.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, alcohol will definitely get that going, but of course there is a problem here anyway. And so was it a mutual let's fight, or one group started it with the other? How did that work?
Well, it seems like the Germans may have started it. This town has apparently had a few so-called racist incidents, whatever that means. Officers were trying to separate the groups, and then for some reason the migrants were throwing bottles at them. You would think after the police rescue you from 80 people when you're only 20 and are being attacked that you wouldn't then throw bottles at the police. So maybe they were deserving of a little bit of scorn there.
Wow. So the police intervened to help them, and they threw the bottles at
yeah.
the police.
It's just I don't understand the thought process there.
That is surprising.
Not too bright.
So I'm guessing what they had some arrests and told everybody to calm down. Did it escalate to the point of injury, or they were able to stop it before then?
Well, there was at least one injury. The far right protesters were shouting nationalist slogans, and then they followed the migrants back to their shelter, and the police were trying to keep the group separate, but then members of the far right group of Germans started throwing stones at an ambulance, so the ambulance couldn't even get back to the shelter to help an injured migrant in that case. they just were really out of control. They were attacking the people put there to assist them, the migrants attacking the police, and then the Germans attacking the emergency crews.
The poor police and the emergency crews are getting it from everybody.
Yeah.
They're just trying to
How do they deserve this?
Settle it down. Dangerous job.
Yeah, that just shows you how out of control some of the emotions have become in this situation. They're just, people are tired of it both ways. I'm sure the migrants feel the same way. You know, why can't you accept us into this society? But it's understandable maybe why they wouldn't.
Yeah, there's going to be tension there probably. And yeah, this is something, again, apparently it wasn't a big, you know, situation in terms of injury or whatever, but it does show an attitude that is kind of bubbling there under the surface, maybe not so much under the surface. It's been written about, it's been talked about a lot, and that's what the government has to try to deal with. They have to try to find a solution between all these various groups, and again, those are some really hard solutions to come up with, because I think it's going to require some sort of action. Rhetoric at some point doesn't cut it, but what action are you going to take? And it doesn't seem like Angela Merkel is wanting to do much of anything other than just continue the policies that are going right now.
Is there really a logical solution outside of extraction and segregation in this case? These two sides just don't agree with each other. Yet, obviously, if a politician ever proposed something like that, his or her political career would be pretty much over. You know, trying to say, let's remove all Muslims from Germany and then even the entire continent probably wouldn't go over too well. But there isn't really too much else you can do, because you just never know which Muslims are more radical and which ones aren't. And when you can't tell, the best way to prevent it is to think of all of them the same way, acknowledge that there could be a threat from any one of them.
Well, it's interesting because the if you look at, like, say, the history before World War II, there was a lot of unrest between different groups. And, you know, it wasn't all, like, people a lot of times, of course, would look at Hitler and say, well, he was behind it. But and he certainly capitalized on it and was behind some of it. But there were just rogue groups also just kind of running amok. And again, this isn't to that level yet, but it is sort of that same, you know, is a government behind that? No, but it just shows an attitude of a group of people, in this case, 80, I guess, that are willing to go out there and cause some problems. And that same sort of thing did happen before World War II. You had different groups, and a lot of times they were in various sort of official groups, you know, like there were people that were veterans from World War I or other groups that got together, and they just kind of kept pushing the bounds on what they could do against whatever group they didn't like, and sometimes the government would turn the other way and not look. And so it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what the response is if these things continue, and I think they probably will, just because, again, you have two groups, completely different ideologies, and, you know, in fairness to the Germans and the Europeans, they've been attacked on their own soil quite a bit here in the last year. So I think a response is understandable. I mean, what else are they going to do?
Yes, that's right. And it's hard to tell how, you know, a supposedly very free and Western culture would deal with a clash like this, because obviously you don't expect roaming bands of belligerents just, you know, lurking in the streets and attacking people who they don't agree with. And I don't really think police are equipped to deal with that on a large scale. So really, if you have two groups here on a collision course, how do you deal with that today? How do you even propose a solution that people will agree with?
Yep, it's interesting. And I guess they should just try to keep the beer away from them as well. Just keep everybody cool. Keep it calm as much as possible. Immigration's an issue here in the United States as well. This is a big story today here from Fox News. DHS, Department of Homeland Security, is accused of sitting on what they call a pretty damning border report as immigration issue drives presidential race. So this is an interesting write-up here. Of course, we are in an election season. And what information is given to the public is sometimes guarded because it could sway the vote. Should that be the case? Should they hold information back? I would say no. I think it should
never
be out there,
yeah,
because the public has a right to know. Says federal lawmakers seeking to pinpoint the number of illegal immigrants who successfully sneak across the southern border ordered up a report from the Department of Homeland Security, but the agency refuses to release it. and instead cites a misleading statistic that overstates the number who are nabbed, sources told Fox News. So they said, look, we want this report. And they said, nah, we're not going to give it to you, but we'll tell you this other information that is not accurate, that makes it seem like, oh, they're catching people coming across the border, and that's not the truth. Why not release the report? I mean, clearly you're hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
Because as they point out in this article, if they do release it, it would throw more support behind Donald Trump and what he's saying, and they don't want that to happen. So, I mean, how can this happen? You know, the fix is in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or in some way. They say DHS denied it is holding back the report, but sources say it was completed in November, and that it shows roughly half of adults who attempt to cross the border make it.
Mm.
So you got 50% coming across that are not being caught. That's just the adults. I don't know about the kids. They say, but that number is at odds with DHS official estimates. The agency claims authorities catch 80% of adults trying to sneak in. But critics say the figure is padded to make it appear border security is more effective than it really is. They say if released by the Obama administration, the true numbers could have major implications in the current presidential race, in which illegal immigration and border security have become a key issue, says observers. One source familiar with the report told Fox News that DHS is suppressing the report for, quote, political reasons, because it would look bad and help elect Donald Trump. That's just front page news. So pretty interesting situation there. A lot more coming across the border than what they are reporting, and we haven't heard a lot about that lately. I mean, there's a lot of other things taking up the top headlines, but it's not like it's not happening and people aren't coming across anymore.
Our Border Patrol has officially endorsed Donald Trump. The people on the ground know they're understaffed and they can't possibly patrol the entire border, the however many miles that is, hundreds or thousands of miles with Mexico. And at the same time, Mexico has built a wall on its southern border to keep out 400,000 migrants who come in every single year. Why can't we do the exact same thing without the Mexicans in turn being upset at us, or all the other migrants being upset at us?
Oh, that's interesting.
No one talks about Mexico having a wall that they recently built.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I just saw it today.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. They've got one.
The hypocrisy.
Yeah. I tell you, that's, again, talking about tough jobs. Very difficult to be a border agent because you can't do your job. You have to kind of look the other way, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they just aren't able to have enough staff to keep an eye on it. Republican lawmakers, they say, are furious that the report they ordered is not being released. They say it erodes the trust as to whether the administration is being honest with the American people about what the threat is, according to Martha McSally from Arizona, who serves on the Committee of Homeland Security and chairs the Border and Maritime Security Subcommittee. She said, this should not be a partisan issue. Democrats, independents, and Republicans in my community want to make sure that the border communities are safe. You know, we were talking the other day about just all the division in the country, and it seems like there should be at least one or two topics everyone could agree on. And this seems like it should be one. Like, yeah, just make sure the border's secure and people can come in, but legally, and make sure there's a process. It seems like everyone should agree on that, but yet they don't.
Yeah, she said it shouldn't be a partisan issue, but if you look at official campaign platforms for both the Democrats and the independents, for the most part, they agree that you should have basically open borders. So, no, it is a partisan issue because only the Republicans want any sort of border security at this point, and not even most of them want to build the wall. They just want to, I don't know, maybe not give amnesty to the ones already here, but they don't really have much of a solution for keeping more people from coming in. It's just, it's a muddled mess, and people are upset at Donald Trump for having the only concrete solution.
Literally.
The concrete wall solution, while everyone else is just accusing him of being a racist.
DHS, of course, doesn't agree. They say any suggestion that DHS is delaying release of a report on new border enforcement measures for political reasons is false, according to one of their spokespeople. They say, to the contrary, At Secretary Johnson's direction, DHS has been making significant progress in the development of such measures. At this point, however, the work is still preliminary and requires further refinement, probably until just right after the election, I'm guessing, to ensure the new measures are accurate and reliable.
It's been 10 months.
Yeah.
It could have been released by now.
How much time do you need? They say the November 2015 report purportedly obtained the report purportedly. That's a
really good one.
That's a tough one. The 2015 report purportedly obtained by Fox News is one building block provided by a research organization. DHS has been working with to develop these measures. So they say the report's not complete. There still needs some time to finish it. Probably till right after that election, then maybe they'll release it. Wow. They don't say that last bit of it, but you know, how much time do you need? It's convenient that you can't get it done at this time.
Right. If you can't get it done in the next couple months, then, the election's passed. I guess we can release it now.
There's been this really, it's been a pattern of not releasing information when it should be released and then waiting until everyone's distracted with something else. A holiday or a weekend, and then they just dump all the documents out there and not enough time for anybody to go through them. They pop up on the headlines and they're gone because everyone's talking about NFL football or, you know, something else that happened, protests or whatever. So anyway, it's kind of interesting write-up here. It's a longer write-up. It's worth your time if you've got some time to check it out. But they talk about just a lot that's going on there. One other thing they mention here, let me just see. They say the irony is the data, by and large, reveals what appears to be good news, actually, according to one of the people here. They say that they think the numbers are down, but I would think that's probably not correct. they'll have to finish their report, I guess, to figure out what exactly has happened. But anyway, they're working on this report. You can read the whole write-up there. It's at foxnews.com. DHS accused of sitting on the border report as immigration issues drive presidential race. So,
50% chance of getting here if you try it. What's stopping someone from trying it if they don't like where they currently are?
Well, and that'll even be an interesting number to look at. I mean, how do they come to that? How do they come? I mean, do they know everybody that's come across? I mean, how do you know who came if you didn't catch them?
That is very suspicious. That's a great point. If we know all the people who have come across and we can say we've caught half of them, then you know that you didn't catch half, presumably because you saw them cross or you know their whereabouts now and aren't doing anything about it.
Yeah, I just don't get that number. That reasoning shows up when people talk about, say, like, a certain percentage of victims never report their attack. It's like, well, how do you know if they never reported it? Number could be higher, could be lower, probably lower in most cases, but they'll throw those numbers out there. You know, 50% of people attacked, you know, in such and such a way, or victims, they don't report it. How would you know that?
Just state it dogmatically enough times. We were talking about last week, as you know, inequality is on the rise in this nation.
Yeah, right.
That's just a typical example that people put at the beginning of an article now, and then they build on that false premise the rest of the piece.
Right. Interesting numbers there. One last story here to mention. This is sports related, NFL related, actually.
Bills game tonight?
No. Who are they playing, by the way?
New York Jets.
Okay.
First home game.
Yeah, that's a winnable one.
My dad was talking about how he's going to enjoy Step Crew, but he also will be taping the Bills game so he can watch it afterward. It's going to be a fun night.
Nobody tell him. Nobody tell him what the score was.
Don't you dare.
Brandon Marshall. There's a couple of Brandon Marshalls that play in the NFL, but this is a guy that he plays defense for the Denver Broncos. He said he's going to donate $300 per tackle this season to charity. He got in trouble. Well, not in trouble, but he took some heat over protesting the national anthem. He's been one of these guys to do that. Denver Broncos linebacker Brandon Marshall has had an eventful week since taking a knee during the national anthem before they played the Panthers. But now on Wednesday, he said that he has had conversations with the Denver police. I'm sure they were interested in talking to him.
So.
What does he have to say? And how he plans to make a difference in the community. He pledges to give $300 to various organizations for every tackle he records in 2016. So who knows where that money's going?
Might be time for him to get injured.
I don't know. I mean, it's not a bad sentiment that he's trying to kind of put his money where his mouth is, I guess. But to various organizations. That could be anybody. And San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick is going to, he said he's going to give $1 million to various organizations again that help people affected by racial injustice. That's pretty.
Those two were college teammates, by the way.
Were they?
And you know what else is interesting? Brandon Marshall lost an endorsement from CenturyLink, which is the sponsor of the Seattle Seahawks stadium. And apparently the Seahawks every game are going to link arms during the national anthem.
Yeah.
So are they going to, I don't know, remove their endorsement of the Seahawks stadium as well? It's just kind of interesting to see how this might really carry some consequences for the people who are protesting.
Yeah, it might cost them. I just wonder what's going to happen if Marshall tackles Kaepernick. Who are they going to give the money to? It's a collision of charities. He won't have to. Kaepernick doesn't play, so he won't have to worry about that. But
tackle him on the sideline.
At least not so far. Yeah. So anyway, he's gonna donate his money. So I guess I didn't check his stats. He's a pretty good defender, so I don't know how many tackles he gets per year. But he's gonna give $300 to various organizations. So maybe it's time to start an organization. See if he can get some money from them. For his some of those protests,
I'll name my organization various organizations.
Yeah, you could get all the
give
money
it all
that
to
way.
Me.
That's not a bad idea. So, anyways, some of the subplots to those games that are going on. Also, wanted to mention today, if you got a chance, stop and check out the trumpet.com. That's always a good idea. Really interesting top story today by Andrew Miller, who you can hear on the Trumpet Hour program. The title of the article is Nationalizing the Family. People across the Western world are embracing a bold new vision for family life without even realizing it. And so it's a really interesting write-up, the idea of nationalizing the family. It was even talked about some on the Trumpet Daily Radio show today as well. The more the government gets involved and puts money into different organizations, it really does affect the family in a lot of ways. A lot of the different welfare programs and that type of thing, they really do have a big impact on the family, and it's making changes that some people don't realize.
Yeah, a big thing off the top of my head that I can think of is incentivizing single motherhood so that maybe a woman would have a child out of wedlock and then receive government benefits from it, and not even she wouldn't even care at that point if the man left, because that was maybe the whole reason she did it. That was actually a pretty big issue in Britain as well, and it's happening here, but I guess not as big of a story has been made of it.
Well, yeah, there was. I actually saw a story the other day about that exact topic, and there was a young lady, well, I guess she's about 30 now, but still fairly young, but they were asking her about her situation, and she had, oh, I don't know how many kids, it was 3, 4, 5, somewhere in there, never been married. And they were just asking her about her benefits that she gets from it. And, yeah, I mean, she's never worked a day in her life. Mm-hmm. And she could rattle off, you know, all the stuff that she gets. And it's a fair bit. And they interviewed her at the, I think, one of the government offices there. She had her new iPhone, and I mean, she was made up. And she'd spent some money on her basic appearance, I guess, and her tattoos, from what I could tell. but yeah, they said, well, do you feel, like, bad about that? No, I don't think so. She says free money, so I might as well. And so it was really quite a bit that she got altogether when you consider food stamps, public housing, just cash. Yeah. And so some people do need that help, and that's a good thing to have when it's in place. But in some cases, they're just living off of that. So
yeah, even your typical family with a father in the household, if they're on welfare, they get more money in most cases per child. So then there's a reason to have more children, get more money from the government. So why would the government encourage really these fraudulent practices from a lot of these families unless they wanted a stake in how the families turned out?
Yeah, really interesting write-up. Nationalizing the Family. You can read that at thetrumpet.com. And make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Those are coming up later today as well. That'll do it for us on this Thursday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. You can download Trumpet Radio live segments from kpcg.fm.